This is the Voice of America, broadcasting with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12, man's second landing on the moon. Apollo 12 is almost at the end of its 400,000-kilometer journey from Earth to the moon, now some 83 hours and 9 minutes into its flight. It is now about 153 kilometers from the lunar surface, traveling at a speed of 9,600 kilometers per hour. In about 17 minutes from now, astronaut Pete Conrad will fire the main spacecraft engine to put Apollo 12 into a lunar orbit. This 3.5-day flight to the moon has been without even minor problems, almost routine if that's possible in any space flight. At the moment, we're standing by for Apollo Mission Control. We will interrupt what we're saying at any time to bring you direct reports from Apollo Mission Control at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas. From our Apollo News Center in Washington, we're continuing our live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Astronauts Pete Conrad, Richard Gordon, and Alan Bean will be moving very soon around the backside of the moon. We should have loss of signal within about 2 to 3 minutes, when we will be out of communications with the Earth. The astronauts will fire the main spacecraft engine for 5 minutes and 58 seconds. Breaking. Here is Apollo Mission Control.
Roger, Houston.
A very brief bit of communication between Apollo 12 and Mission Control. We're waiting, standing by for that communication. Very soon we will have loss of signal, according to our calculations here, in about 1 minute. The spacecraft will be moving behind the moon, on the backside of the moon, cutting off communications for about 32 minutes. The actual burn for the lunar orbit insertion will come at about 10:47 Eastern Standard Time. That would be 2:47 Greenwich Mean Time, in about 12 minutes from now. And now let's get an updated report. We understand correspondent Rhett Turner is on hand at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas.
We're coming up now, 30 seconds until loss of signal. All the flight controllers here in Mission Control getting one last look at their data before the space.
We're listening to Mission Control, Doug Ward, giving us an update.
All systems looking very good prior to this lunar orbit insertion maneuver.
That's the voice of Mission Control. The countdown is continuing, as Bill McCrory reported to you. We should have loss of signal momentarily at coming up very soon, and that should be loss of signal. Or possibly an antenna channel.
And our network controller reports we've had loss of signal right on schedule. We should reacquire Apollo 12 in about 32 minutes. Without the burn, the reacquisition time would be 24 minutes 40 seconds from now. At last look, just before we lost data, the spacecraft was at an altitude of 471.9 nautical miles, velocity at 7,188 feet per second.
Well, things
at
are happening.
83 hours, 13 minutes into the flight of Apollo 12. This is Mission Control, Houston.
As you can see, things were happening quite fast there. Just as we joined you, the spacecraft has now gone out of touch with the Earth behind the moon, and the lunar orbit insertion burn will come 12 minutes from now at 83 hours, 25 minutes, 23 seconds after liftoff from the Earth.
Well, Rhett Turner, we should explain to our listeners that we had some communications problems or loss of signal ourselves from you, our correspondent at the Manned Spacecraft Center, and you just joined us on the air here a couple of minutes ago. We'll call once again to correspondent Rhett Turner in Houston, Texas.
Oh, I'm with you, Bill. I thought you were through with my report there. as you heard Doug Ward, who is the voice of Apollo Control, saying at this moment, the spacecraft will be out of touch with us for about 32 minutes if the burn comes on time. If not, we should acquire in 24 minutes after loss of signal. So we'll try to keep a watch on that. In other words, if we hear from the spacecraft early, you may know that the rocket, the service propulsion system engine, did not fire properly. But the longer it takes for them to come around the backside of the moon and get back in contact with the Earth, then the more we may be sure that the lunar orbit maneuver was carried out. Bill?
At this point, I'd like to reintroduce our VOA coverage team for the flight of Apollo 12. We'll be broadcasting here during this lunar orbit insertion maneuver. Here at our VOA Apollo News Center in Washington, I'll be joined by my co-host and fellow anchorman, Norman Guerin. You've heard already from correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas. Our guest expert from NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, is Merle Waugh, Director of Program Control in the Advanced Manned Missions Program. Merle is an old friend of ours. He was with us on our first broadcast of the Mercury space flights a number of years ago. Norm?
Merle Waugh, one of the primary objectives, or the primary objective of Apollo 12, is scientific exploration this time. And there are quite a few changes coming up in the next couple of days, the critical moments of Apollo 12, power descent, and the EVA activities. Would you like to comment on some of these changes?
Well, Norm, I think the changes are primarily in the scientific program, which the astronauts will carry out. Of course, the power descent and landing and so forth will be done with the benefit of one time's experience, and we expect to be able to land at a more precise pre-planned location, namely near the site of the surveyor, or actually we're aiming right at the site of one of the surveyors. The scientific program, of course, will build on the on what we accomplished last time. And in that sense, will be almost entirely different, although, of course, the main job will be to bring back rocks, as we did previously, for further analysis and investigation.
There's also a more ambitious photographic mission this time, I take it, too.
Plus, they're going to have at least two periods outside the spacecraft, and they expect to accomplish quite a bit more.
Well, Merle Waugh, this matter of the firing of the main spacecraft engine, which will take place now in about 9 minutes at 2:47 Greenwich Mean Time, has become almost routine, hasn't it? And yet it's a very important one. It's the maneuver that will place the spacecraft actually within, become a captive of the moon and place it in orbit around the moon.
Well, in this case, of course, this orbit that was selected was not what we call a free return orbit. So even prior to this time, this burn, the astronauts were in a, sort of a no-go situation. But certainly these two lunar orbit insertion burns will place them into the proper lunar orbit in preparation for their separation of the lunar module and the later descent down to the lunar surface.
Well, Merle, we'll be calling on you often during this broadcast as we continue with our coverage of the maneuver to put the spacecraft into orbit around the moon.
This is the Voice of America broadcasting from Washington, from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, and from the Apollo 12 spacecraft circling the moon. While we're waiting for further reports from Apollo Mission Control, here are broadcast bands for this continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. In Europe, the 19, 25, 31, 41, and 49-meter band shortwave. To Latin America, on the 19, 25, 31, and 49-meter bands. We can be heard in Africa on the 25, 31, 41, and 49 meter bands. In South Asia, on the 25, 31, and 41 meter bands. We are broadcasting to East Asia and the Pacific on the 11, 13, 16, 19, 25, 31, 41, and 49 meter bands shortwave. Those are the broadcast bands for the Voice of America's live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12.
And for our listeners, I think we might review just what is happening. We have what we call LOS, a loss of signal from the spacecraft. This is quite normal because the spacecraft now is moving around on what we would call the backside of the moon, the side away from the Earth. We will not regain communications for another 25 to 26 minutes from now. At the time of the firing of the big spacecraft engine to put the craft into lunar orbit, that engine will be fired for 5 minutes and 58 seconds. Repeating once again, it is a braking action. It slows down the Apollo 12 from its speed of roughly 9,600 kilometers an hour to a speed of about 5,800 kilometers. This then will make the spacecraft a captive of lunar gravity, putting it into its first orbit around the moon. This will be an egg-shaped or an elliptical orbit of 111 by 314 kilometers. Later on, about 2 revolutions after that, 2 revolutions, that is, around the moon, we will have what we call LOI-2, that is, a second burn of the spacecraft engine to put the craft into a near-circular orbit. Well, gentlemen, I think at this point, we might, while we're waiting for further reports from Apollo Mission Control, and by the way, we have not had one since loss of signal, we might listen to an interview conducted a few days ago by correspondent Rhett Turner with the Apollo mission commander, Pete Conrad. Pete describes very well the purposes of this mission and the various steps that they will be taking.
Pete, would you describe the overall mission of Apollo 12?
Well, I think the overall mission of Apollo 12 is starting a second generation of flights. We've worked very diligently to achieve a lunar landing in the time frame that we set out. And Apollos 12 through 20 now have the job of exploring the moon. And our flight, I think, is the first attempt at that, to utilize the whole flight for that. We've spent the majority of our training time on the lunar surface operation with respect to the scientific accomplishments that are called out to be done on that flight, deploy the ALSAP package, and do the detailed lunar geology. It was sort of the object of Apollo 11 to successfully work out the landing and ascent procedures as the last part of the package that we worked on through Apollo 7 through 11. And, of course, I can't remember the number right now, but we are shifting over later on in the Apollo series to a 3-day LEM, which will allow us even longer useful lunar exploration. One of the other interesting things right now, we feel that we have worked out our 32-hour lunar stay time to utilize the maximum that we have of that time to spend on lunar surface, which is right now fixed at 7 hours, and it may be open-ended longer than that in real time. I think it's interesting that a lot of our time in doing that is spent getting ready to get out for the time period, and the amount of time that we spend cleaning up after we come back in, and then we have to go through the same cycle to get back out again. And one of the other things which we hope to find out, if we do open-end our timeline, is, and I think that it's going to turn out this way, that it's probably better to get man all dressed and get him out on the lunar surface for what you would consider like a normal working day. Get him outside and let him stay out for 7 or 8 hours. Now, to do that, along with this, and I think to utilize the the time most effectively in exploring the lunar surface, we need on the three-day LEMS to also develop the life support system, which will allow us to stay out for the amount of time, like 6 or 7 hours.
Mm-hmm. You consider Apollo 12 a step in the direction of these developments you're discussing?
Yes, well, I consider it twofold. We're really doing, we should always be looking to the future. And also, in that sense, I think that our timeline and our EVA and what we accomplish in it will be an indicator of what we can do in the future when we have the longer stay LEMS. And, of course, the other thing, which is the most important thing in the object, is to do the experiments in their order of priority, which is the ALSAP first. And for those that are not familiar with it, that's a package that will have a nuclear generating source of electrical power that will run 4 experiments for a year after we leave and transmit that data in real time back to Earth during that year whenever the scientists want to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
They do have the ability to turn it on and off. And so it should run and send data back on our landing site for at least a year after we leave. And, of course, the other part is to do this detailed sampling of the lunar surface and bring back as many rocks that are detailed in the proper manner. And we've spent a great deal of time working on these procedures to get the proper photographs and to tie the rocks into the proper context from which they came and so forth. And that's pretty much really the difference between 12 and 11. We really are looking for this useful work period on the moon. That's what we're going for.
What do you think is the most important thing that you have gained from 11 for use in your flight?
I think the most important thing that we gained from 11 was we were working on this flight prior to the time 11 landed, and I made an assumption that their simulations of the lunar surface operations and that their input into making the landing, the procedures for making the landing and the ascent would be good enough based on their homework and from what we observed of their lunar surface operations and from what they told us, that we wouldn't have to change any of the things that we were doing. In other words, I built our whole lunar surface plan around a successful Apollo 11. And as it turned out, Apollo 11 was successful both in the landing and in the lunar surface operation. At least man got out. We didn't have the apparent fatigue problems that we had in the early Gemini EVAs, which said we learned our homework. Our simulations were good. It looked to us that while we were doing our simulations, the lunar surface work in 11 was, that we weren't going to have any problems, but we'd been bitten a few times before, so we were a little suspicious. And I can remember sitting in a control center watching them do the experiments that they were doing and that I was very, very familiar with, and seeing that it went so well that I was very excited that night, and the fact that it was going to make no change to all the work we had done up to that time.
Really confidence in your own procedure.
Very, very good, yeah. It was very reassuring.
Good luck in carrying them on.
Thank you.
Command module pilot, the man in charge of the Apollo 12 spacecraft, Charles Pete Conrad. This is the Voice of America, broadcasting with continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Today, the lunar orbit insertion, the burn of the big spacecraft engine, putting it into a lunar orbit. That should have taken place about 2 minutes ago. But let's get an update report now, once again, back to the Manned Spacecraft Center and correspondent Rhett Turner.
The lunar orbit insertion burn came about 5 or 6 minutes earlier than we anticipated in earlier flight planning. Of course, this is due to the fact that as the mission progresses, as the spacecraft goes toward the moon, these figures are constantly refined. It came at 84 hours, 11 minutes after liftoff from the Earth, and we're watching a countdown clock here on one of our displays, telling us that acquisition of signal will come in 9 minutes. If the service propulsion system rocket did not burn, it will come in 16 minutes and 15 seconds if the burn was performed on time. The spacecraft, of course, now out of touch with the Earth because the moon has come between us as it swings around behind the moon, some 110 kilometers above the surface. And when it reaches a point 110 kilometers above the surface, directly behind the moon when viewed from the Earth, in other words, halfway around, then that maneuver is to be performed. The rocket burn at 83 hours, 25 minutes. It should have been 3 minutes ago, the beginning of the burn. It lasts for some 5 minutes. And burn will slow the spacecraft. It will actually slow it down from its some 6,000 feet per second velocity. It will remove about 2,889 feet per second velocity to slow it into an initial egg-shaped orbit, which will swing from that 110-kilometer altitude at the time of the rocket firing. Around on the forward side of the moon toward the Earth, they'll swing up to about 300 kilometers above the surface. And then a few hours from now, another rocket maneuver will circularize. In fact, it's called LOI-2, Lunar Orbit Insertion Burn Number 2, to circularize the orbit. That, again, a brief explanation of what is happening right now. The rocket should be continuing to fire at this moment. Of course, we won't know until acquisition of signal again in about 14 minutes.
Well, Rhett Turner, I wonder if we could go back over this roughly 3.5 days of what we call a lunar coast. It has been a very smooth trip, has it not? In fact, I can't think of even a minor problem.
There has been no problem whatever. It's been the most relaxed flight I've ever heard of because these three astronauts are extremely confident and relaxed. The most exciting launch ever, and then the most relaxed flight ever so far.
Well, we even did away with the final mid-course correction, did we not, earlier in the day, that is the day Monday.
Were scheduled. Four mid-course corrections throughout the trajectory between the Earth and the Moon were scheduled. The first was canceled shortly after launch because the S-4B, the third stage of the Saturn rocket, fired quite accurately, sending the spacecraft toward the Moon. The second mid-course correction was performed, and that was one of the highlights, the new events in this mission. It removed the spacecraft, the Apollo 12 craft, from what is called a free return trajectory and caused it to swing toward the Moon in a path that would cause it to loop around the Moon and come back toward the Earth, but then miss the Earth. So that is the one of the important new events, mid-course correction number two, the hybrid trajectory burn, as it's been called. And then this one rocket maneuver was so very accurate that then mid-course corrections number three and four were also canceled. So you may note that with each flight, the flight directors, the mission controllers, the trackers are getting more and more accurate in their tracking information and in their ability to precisely put one of these spacecraft on target. We hear some communication on the circuit now with Honeysuckle Creek in Australia. A communications check, a countdown. The little beeps you hear, incidentally, are signals caused by the keying of microphones. Anytime one of these communicators keys his mic or pushes the button to talk, you hear a beep. Now Houston is checking with the Goldstone Tracking Station in California. These two stations are online, meaning that they are active.
And the spacecraft will come around in normal voice.
Goldstone, roger.
Honeysuckle, roger.
And the Vogas are bypassed.
Goldstone, confirmed. Vogas bypassed.
Honeysuckle, Vogas bypassed.
Roger.
Rhett Turner?
That's a rare incident, hearing the communications network talk with the tracking stations. You heard the mission control say that Goldstone is active for the LOI at acquisition and Honeysuckle is backup, the other tracking station down in Australia, Honeysuckle Creek.
Would you give us another check on time for acquisition of signal? How far away are we from...
11 minutes.
11 minutes.
11 minutes, 25 seconds now until we should acquire. If we acquire in 4 minutes from now, we'll know they're in trouble. Rocket service propulsion rocket didn't fire.
We'll ask you to stand by, if you will, Rhett Turner, at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. For the moment, we would like to go to the Voice of America newsroom for a brief summary of late world news.
In the headlines, Israel denounces partial takeover of UN refugee camps in Lebanon by Arab guerrillas. The United States and the Soviet Union begin preliminary talks to try to halt arms race. Now the news in detail.
Waves of Israeli planes attacked artillery units in the north of Jordan and a radar station operated by Egyptians in the south of Jordan. Israel said one of its planes was shot down, but that its pilot parachuted safely into Israeli territory. Jordan said six of its soldiers and a small child were killed in the Israeli raids, and 13 persons wounded. At the United Nations, Israel denounced the partial takeover of UN refugee camps in Lebanon by Arab guerrillas and demanded that the UN Relief Agency cut off aid to camps under guerrilla control. Israeli Ambassador Yosef Tekoa said the UN cannot give aid to persons engaged in warfare against a member state. American and Soviet representatives begin the first working session of their preliminary strategic arms limitation talks in Helsinki Tuesday. The opening ceremony was held in Finland's historic state banquet hall Monday. Finnish Foreign Minister Ati Karjalainen said in his welcoming remarks that the two major nuclear powers, by starting the discussions, have acknowledged responsibility for maintaining international peace and security. A message from President Nixon, read by Chief U.S. Envoy Gerard Smith, said the hopes of Americans and all mankind are for a sustained effort to limit and later reduce the size of strategic weapons arsenals. And the chief Soviet delegate, Vladimir Semyonov, said positive results would serve to improve Soviet-American relations and consolidate universal peace. America's ambassador to the United Nations, Charles Yost, called on all nations to achieve agreements to control, limit, and reduce all armaments. Ambassador Yost spoke before the General Assembly's main political committee, which began a debate on disarmament. Mr. Yost said the U.S.-Soviet arms limitation talks in Helsinki are of the most serious and important negotiations ever undertaken in the field of arms control and disarmament. Joseph Kennedy, the father of the late president, is reported near death at the Kennedy home in Hyannisport, Massachusetts. The 81-year-old patriarch of one of America's most politically active families suffered a heart attack over the weekend, one of several during the past few months. He has been in ill health since a stroke 8 years ago. Members of the family assembled at the home, including three daughters and Senator Edward Kennedy, the only surviving son. India's Prime Minister Indira Gandhi won an overwhelming vote of support when the lower house of parliament rejected a censure motion by a vote of 306 to 140. The vote was the first such test of strength for the Gandhi government since it lost its absolute majority in parliament through a split in the ruling Congress party. Tunisia's president, Habib Bourguiba, has arrived in Paris for medical examinations, treatment, and rest. Agence France-Presse says that before he left Tunis, the president issued a decree putting the prime minister in charge of state affairs. The Tunisian president suffers from hepatitis. The United States government announced an agreement in principle to allow a planned merger between British Petroleum and the Standard Oil Company of Ohio. The merger would permit British Petroleum to gain a bigger foothold in the United States domestic oil market. That's the news from the Voice of America, Jim Hamilton reporting.
And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Today, the maneuver for lunar orbit insertion, placing the Apollo 12 spacecraft in a lunar orbit in preparation for descent to the moon on Wednesday. We will be pausing in just a few moments, pausing for 5 seconds to allow transmitter changes and to allow certain broadcast transmitters to leave us. This program is coming to you from the United States of America. From the Apollo News Center in Washington, from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas, the Voice of America continues its live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. We're standing by now to reacquire signal from the Apollo 12 spacecraft, now on the backside of the moon. The maneuver The lunar orbit insertion maneuver took place about 13 minutes ago. Let's get an update report now from the Manned Spacecraft Center and correspondent Rhett Turner.
The Mission Control Center has reconfigured some of its closed-circuit displays to us here in our Voice of America control room at the mission, near the Mission Control Center. And we note that they are preparing one of the color TV displays for the TV camera transmissions. The spacecraft is scheduled to turn on its television set in about 20 minutes from now. The Mission Control waiting quietly for acquisition of signal in about 5 minutes. We've lost our countdown clock because of this preparation for the color TV transmission.
We should get a signal.
So we're waiting any time for that.
We should get signal, if we estimate correctly, Rhett, in about 4 minutes, 4 to 5 minutes.
As I say, Bill, we have lost the countdown clock display here because of this configuring our TV transmission displays from the Mission Control Center over to our studio. We've lost the one with the countdown clock because they're preparing it for a TV transmission.
Merle Waugh nods that it will be in 4 to 5 minutes, so I guess we can depend on that for the time being at least until...
I'm estimating that.
Right.
We're past the point at which we would acquire signal if the rocket did not burn, incidentally. So that means that they apparently have pulled off the maneuver. They probably are in orbit around the moon now because... If the service propulsion system engine had not fired, we would have acquired signal about 2 minutes ago. We've got the clock back. I made a quick call to the Mission Control a minute ago and made the request. We now have 3 minutes and 40 seconds until acquisition of signal, according to the display which just popped up in front of us.
Well, that last burn, of course, Rhett, lumped into it. Any residual mid-course correction that hadn't been made, so it may have been a little bit different than we knew in advance, but it probably will show up in about 4 more minutes, hopefully.
We're 3 minutes and 50 seconds past the time of acquisition of signal had that burn not been accomplished.
Well, this is always a tense moment. I remember on the earlier trips to the moon, and of course during Apollo 11, the first lunar landing mission, when you wait for that spacecraft to come around from the backside of the moon, and you wait for the first signal from the spacecraft. Usually, I believe it's from the spacecraft commander, in this case, Pete Conrad, saying whether or not that burn was successful. Well, Rhett Turner...
Minutes, 30 seconds now, Bill.
Rhett Turner, what... have these gentlemen been doing on these three and a half days? We know we've seen a number of excellent television, color television pictures from the command module and also from the lunar module, a tour of the lunar spacecraft, I believe, yesterday.
I think one of the most interesting things, it's been quite relaxed. They've been doing very little of anything but watching, waiting, thinking about what they were going to be doing. As Pete Conrad said, in one of the most interesting exchanges we've had, we've been doing a little astronomy, a little geology, a little geography, and I was going to try to find that quote from him here, and he said, and considerable eating. Al Bean last night radioed down. We had an interesting exchange over a can of tuna fish, which is one of the high points of the last 24 hours, as a matter of fact. It seems they opened a can of tuna fish salad day before yesterday, ate about half of it, and kept the rest, and then decided, Al happens to love tuna fish. I happen to know this firsthand, and he likes spaghetti, too, very much. But he wanted to eat the rest of that tuna fish, but he said, I don't know if it would have spoiled or not in a day's time, so he called down here to Mission Control, and Don Lind, an astronaut who's also a nuclear physicist, asked around the control room. Here's Apollo Control.
We're coming up now on 1 minute until reacquiring Apollo 12. At the time of acquisition, the spacecraft should be in an orbit of 62 by 169.3 nautical miles. We're now 45 seconds from reacquisition. The lunar orbit insertion burn, a 5 minute 58 second burn of the spacecraft service propulsion system engine. The total velocity reduction from that maneuver was targeted for 2,889 feet per second. We now show 15 seconds until acquisition. We'll stand by for first communications from the spacecraft. Our network controller reports that we have acquisition of signal at this time.
It means the burn was accomplished okay. That looks pretty good so far, according to the timing. Anyway, they couldn't decide whether they should eat the tuna fish or not. Nobody in mission control knew. I think they finally threw it out, just to be sure. There we have.
Signal should be coming in.
The sound of the signal.
Yes, voice should be in shortly.
There always is a lock-in of data.
Apollo 12, Houston.
Before this voice call.
Hello, Houston. Yankee Clipper with Intrepid in tow has arrived on time. Are you ready for the burn status report?
That's affirmative. Go ahead, Clipper.
That's Pete Conrad.
Okay, the burn was on time. The burn time was 5 + 5, 2. The residuals were -0.1, +0.1, +0.1. Delta VC was +1.0. The fuel, 38.4. The oxidizer, 38.7. The unbalance was increased 80 pounds. Over.
Roger, 12, copied.
That's Pete Conrad giving the burn status report. Yankee
Clipper. Computer says we're in a 170 by 61.8.
That's his onboard computer giving him the readout of his orbit.
Roger, 12.
170 by 61.8 nautical miles. That's pretty close to that 110 by 300
yes.
plus kilometer orbit.
About 111.
I guess like everybody else that just arrived, they're all three of us are plastered to the windows looking.
Roger, understood.
As Conrad says, they're all plastered to the windows looking.
Yeah, for the Navy troops, it doesn't look like a very good place to pull Liberty, though.
That's Al Bean.
Okay, we give you an okay three-wire on that one.
We're going to hear some nautical terms here.
Very good. I hope we can say the same thing tomorrow. Save those for tomorrow.
The communications are excellent there. They're only about 150 kilometers now from the lunar surface, I believe.
That's right. Pete's first words were, Yankee Clipper with Intrepid in tow has arrived on time. Pete Conrad. Alan Bean, we haven't heard from Dick Gordon yet.
He's going to be the busy one during that stay on the moon while Alan Bean and... Pete Conrad are on the surface.
Matter of fact, I think, I believe Gordon is in the left seat at this point. He's flying the mother ship, the Yankee Clipper, so he's probably busy going through all of the instrument checkoffs now and reconfiguring the spacecraft, the command module, Yankee Clipper. Because Pete and Al have pretty well left the conduct of the command craft to
Pete Conrad's post-burn report indicates the maneuver was almost precisely as planned. The residuals, which are an indication of burn error, were -0.1, +0.1, and +0.1, which indicates the burn was nearly perfect. The onboard indication, as you heard, was that the orbit was 170 by 61.8, and we're working on a confirmation of that orbit here in mission control at this time.
You see, he gets a quick reading from his spacecraft computer system of what that orbit is. And then the ground wants to track them for a few minutes with Goldstone, California, and Honeysuckle Creek backing this up. And 500,000 kilometers away, they will track a few minutes and then confirm what that orbit appears to be by watching the spacecraft's path as it comes around the east limb of the moon as we look at it from the Earth.
Rhett Turner, there's a lot of emphasis placed on systems checks following the launch, the lightning and all. Wondered if you have a report on the lunar module checkout.
All of the lunar module equipment is perfect. They've been astronauts Conrad and Bean, who are going to fly down the surface, have been over there into the spacecraft three times to look at the instruments on board, and everything is working perfectly. The reason for the second ingress a couple of days ago was because it turned out that a light was left on, a small light very similar to a refrigerator bulb that comes on when the spacecraft hatch latches, one of the latches goes on, It didn't make connection. And when they went back to the command module, they found that there was still a slight electrical load. They could tell that something was using a little more electricity than it should be. It's like closing the refrigerator door and the light stays
light
on
stays
inside. But how do you know it's on? The way they knew it was on is because of the electrical load on their instruments. So they checked the hatch again, and sure enough, it was the little light was burning. They got it turned off. Everything's okay.
Go 12.
A call from the...
That was an excellent long-range rifle shot you guys gave us.
Glad to understand. We'll pass it on.
A long-range rifle shot.
An excellent long-range rifle shot you gave us, meaning the trajectory from the Earth to the Moon was extremely accurate, and certainly it was. That was Conrad making that comment.
They're now in lunar orbit, some 111 by about 314 kilometers.
Now we're scheduled for a live TV broadcast now in about 20 minutes, aren't we?
I believe a little less than that. About 8 minutes, is it not?
We should be getting live television in about 8 minutes, about the last 10 minutes of our broadcast here tonight. I hope, I'm now waiting to see which of my displays here at our VOA control center in Houston we're able to watch that on. I think we'll lose our clock display again. We have only so many TV circuits between the newsroom, the place where all the newsmen are watching, and the mission control center. So when the color television camera comes on the spacecraft, there's only one color TV circuit to all of the newsmen watching that can be used to feed that signal to us on.
I wonder if all of you who are here, Rhett Turner at Houston and Merle Waugh, Norm Guerin here at our Apollo News Center in Washington, have noticed that
this is Apollo Control. Our displays here in Mission Control now show the spacecraft in an orbit of 62.7 by 168.8, which compares very closely with the figures Pete Conrad read from the onboard computer. We also have on the front display board now, for the first time during the mission, the large plot board showing the spacecraft orbit around the moon.
That's the first cut, as Phil Schaffer describes it, the chief flight dynamics officers. These are the boys who get them gear.
We're standing by for television transmission from the spacecraft, scheduled to begin in a little less than 9 minutes at 84 hours ground elapsed time.
That'd be at 22 minutes after the hour.
The Apollo 12 spacecraft now in its first orbit around the moon, and that orbit takes roughly about 2 hours.
I wanted to point out, if I could there, Bill, the unsung heroes of this very accurate rifle shot at the moon that Pete commented upon a minute ago, and they are the flight dynamics boys in what's called the trench, the front row of the mission control, the people who take all of the tracking data coming in from those tracking stations around the world, the three main ones, Madrid, Spain, Honeysuckle Creek in Australia, and Goldstone in California. They run all this data through the computers here in the Mission Control Center and come up with this very accurate tracking information.
Any words on your observations?
Paul White's asking for our comments.
Well, Houston, I was just looking at one very, very odd, and it looks like a very fresh impact crater that sort of collapsed on one side.
That's Conrad.
That we've been looking at and discussing a little bit. It's got some fairly high raised sides on it, and we haven't quite got ourselves oriented to the proper size yet. I think these craters are much bigger than anything we've ever seen on Earth, so we're just sitting here discussing various sizes and getting ourselves oriented on the map.
It's difficult to have a reference. If there was something that they know sitting there, it'd be easy.
We're starting to look with it.
Okay.
He's looking through the monocular, this high-powered eyepiece. Conrad describing what the moon looks like to them. They're trying to adjust their sense of size as they look down at the craters moving below them as they go into this first revolution of the lunar surface.
I suppose the Apollo 11 astronauts are the only ones who would really have a point of reference there.
Paul, if some of these large craters
That's Bean.
The other one, it looks like, if you look towards the distance, you can see that they, at least from here, appear darker, and it looks very flat, like the Mari looked from Earth. But it, the same size ones that you pass right over, they don't look a bit darker than any other of the terrain. So I guess it must have something to do with the way the sun refracts off the surface. We're passing a beautiful impact crater here on our right side now. It's got many, many long rays. This is beauty.
That was Al Bean. He's a Texan. Sometimes you can hear that Texas drawl come through just a little bit, and then Pete Conrad is a Pennsylvanian. Their speech sounds very much the same here.
That was Al Bean commenting on the lunar surface below them. Spacecraft currently 87.1 nautical miles above the lunar surface.
Moving up just a bit above the surface on this egg-shaped orbit. It's going to be a little difficult. We have quite similar voice qualities between Conrad and Bean. And so on this mission, as they go down onto the surface of the moon, we've got to watch some very subtle things about their voices in order to identify just who is talking. Al's voice is just a little lower, a little deeper than Pete's, and Pete has a more of an eastern twang to his voice, and sometimes you can hear Al Bean's Texas drawl.
It's the impact crater that we're going over right now.
That's Conrad.
Which has such a fantastic ejecta pattern that we can see it so well. Ejecta pattern's got to go out 50 or 60 crater diameters, very easily discernible with the eye. And you can almost, you can pretty well tell the direction of the impact from looking at the ejecta blanket, but it's really spectacular.
The ejecta blanket. The ejecta blanket, the material thrown out onto the surface from a crater impact. About 4 minutes until we should have a television transmission.
And this will be a color transmission, will it not?
Yes, inside, this is the camera that's inside the command module, the same camera we've seen transmitting back to Earth thus far throughout the mission. An identical one is mounted in the lunar module in what is called the MESA, that stowage assembly outside the craft. We won't see color TV from the limb until Pete Conrad climbs out and opens the MESA. Then we should see him descend to the surface, just as we did with Neil Armstrong, only this time in color. That's a day from now, though.
I started to ask Merle Waugh, our NASA expert here, if he felt that there was much less tension on this flight, particularly these events that have been happening over the past 3.5 days, than on Apollo 11.
I would say it appears that way, with the one exception of the lightning incident on the liftoff. We're going through these various aspects of the flight with the knowledge that we've done it one time before. The real test will be on the lunar surface, where they get into some new type activities, particularly the last part of the EVA, where they, as I understand it, plan to work very closely with ground crews on the Earth and work through a procedure they practice many times, whereby they utilize geologists on the Earth to help guide them step by step through a fact-finding exploratory trail. But anyway, other than that, I would say it was a much more relaxed flight.
They're getting a lot of sleep, for one thing.
Yes,
so
they have. They've had two, at least two that I know of, 10-hour sleep periods, perhaps
three,
even
yeah.
more. Three?
They've had three 10-hour sleep periods. That extra long sleep period this last night, I
Houston will be coming up with the TV in just a few minutes.
That's
okay,
Conrad.
Well, can you see Langrenus yet?
No, we can't quite see that yet, but we've been looking over at Humboldt. It, looking at all the great fracture marks and everything. Actually, it looks to me like some crisscross roads down there in the desert or something. Be interesting.
That was Conrad. That was Conrad reporting that. The reason the last sleep period managed to be 10 hours was because they got some extra sleep when the fourth mid-course rocket maneuver was not necessary. Got sleep an extra couple hours. They're getting ahead on their sleep and cycled in a way that they will be very fresh just before the time of descent, touchdown to the moon, and that first EVA, or that first exploration of the lunar surface.
Well, they're sleeping in what is daytime here in the United States. In other words, as you say, they have changed their sleep cycle completely.
Yeah, I wish we could have done that, too,
yes.
In retrospect now.
It would have helped.
Red Turner, I understand they have a new exerciser aboard this time. Did you see it?
Mm-mm. You know about it? What's it like?
Well, it's a can-like device on which they pull a string and can exert a pressure up to 5 to 100 pounds, I understand.
I've seen them using a bungee cord device, which is an elastic thing with a lot of rubber bands that you pull. And they can sort of do sit-ups by pulling this thing, hook it over your feet.
We're starting to get a television picture now from the spacecraft.
Here comes the TV. Here's the color signal coming in now. There they are, pointing out the spacecraft window, looking down at the surface.
Hello, 12 Houston. We're starting to get a picture now.
Now, let's see if we can get our own little color set adjusted here. If you're watching color anywhere in the world, make that picture look sort of like a chocolate milkshake, and then you should come out just about right. They always say that from this altitude, it has a very light tannish quality to it. When you get down on the surface, it's charcoal black.
12 Houston, for information, you should be crossing 60 degrees east at 840208.
I believe this signal will be going.
I agree.
Many of our friends in Europe, particularly Japan, other areas of the world, watching this live color TV. For those of you who may be following us strictly on Voice of America Radio, we'll try to describe it for you. Conrad asking how the picture looks.
Okay,
he can't tell too much from the monitor.
We're getting the lunar surface. It appears that we can see the subsolar point, or could at one time there. We can see numerous small light-colored craters.
These appear as very bright spots, these light-colored craters.
Hand it over to Dick. He's got Langerness out the window.
They're moving the camera now across the spacecraft. Dick Gordon's going to point it out his window.
We're coming up on box to you.
Alrighty.
Crater Langerness. We can see the horizon of the moon there.
Dick's got the camera. He's pointing it over towards Langerness now.
That's Al Bean saying Dick's pointing the camera toward Langerness, a very prominent crater feature. Well, you got to find
it. Here's a beautiful thing. Whenever you get finished, I'll see if I can shoot it. Okay. Behind Geeks in the middle. What happened to the monocular? There it is.
That's Al Bean talking to Pete Conrad. Pete asks, what happened to the monocular? Al says, here it is. Dick Gordon is holding the camera now.
Our signal has just come in here to our Washington studio now. Our picture, I should say, our picture monitor.
None of the local Houston TV stations are carrying this, I notice. I'm not carrying it live. This is being tape recorded.
Oh, there's the central peak right in line with us right there.
That's Dick Gordon now, first time we've heard from
you. Okay, I see those pretty well.
Raj, we're picking it up. On the screen, the colors appear to be green to brown. Can you describe the colors in the scene that you're seeing there now?
That'll do for now.
The central mountain peaks inside the crater Langerness.
That is sort of in the center of Langerness. I'm looking at through the binocular, and apparently
that's Conrad.
They look very smooth with the naked eye, but by looking through the binocular, I can pick up these black dots. They're very black, and they're obviously very large boulders that are sitting around on them.
Rog, the picture on the TV screen of that central peak, it appeared to be rather rounded.
They've moved the camera around again. That was Pete Conrad describing
it. But it's got a lot of big boulders sitting on it.
Hand the camera over to Al now. He's got some stuff up his window.
Okay.
They're moving it around
that's
inside.
That's one for the geologist. Materials out his window he wants to shine up down on.
Al Bean has found some material he wants the geologist to see, so now he's pointing the camera out his window over on the right-hand side of the spacecraft, the Yankee Clipper. Every now and then we can see the lunar horizon as they move it around.
You were asking what color it looks like from here.
That's Al.
It's changed slightly as we went around. At first, it had a very, very light gray, white concrete appearance. Now it has more of a, it's still a light gray concrete, but it has a little, just a touch of brown in it. At least that's the way it appears to me. That's the moon that's directly below us. Of course, there's several places that are very, very white. I'll point the camera at one of them now. It's a small crater.
Very bright.
It's, very symmetrical. It just looks like a cone with a flat bottom.
Right.
See that?
Okay, it's going out the top of the screen. Can you move up and pick it up just a little? Yeah, that's good.
There
you go.
Very bright white crater right in the center of the screen. And he says it had a... some of the colors look like concrete.
Yeah, I understand that this crater is, appears to be white down inside, Al. Is that right?
Well, it's pretty bright. It's white, and then it's got some radial streaks of a more darker material. It's moving down, looks, or at least runs from the rim down to the center, down to the flat bottom. I think you can see those on the TV. Let me show you a real bright crater that's more towards the horizon, but it's one of the very, very bright ones. Can you see that?
That's Alan Bean.
Put it right in the center.
Okay, I see one that's just a little bit above the edge of the window there.
Alan Bean now.
I'm sorry, but we've got to interrupt our description of the television picture because we have come to the end of another live broadcast in the Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Today, the successful firing of the main spacecraft engine, putting it into a lunar orbit of 111 by 314 kilometers. In about 3.5 hours from now, that engine will be burned again to put Apollo 12 into a near-circular orbit of 108 kilometers. All of this in preparation for Wednesday morning's descent and landing on the moon. The Voice of America's continuous coverage of Apollo 12, the Apollo 12 lunar landing, will begin at 4 hours GMT on Wednesday. We'll stay on the air until astronauts Pete Conrad and Alan Bean are safely on the moon's surface aboard the landing craft Intrepid. Later, we'll bring you complete live coverage of the two moonwalks, scheduled for Wednesday and Thursday mornings. And we will continue to interrupt our regular broadcast schedule for any late developments in the flight of Apollo 12. My thanks to my colleagues here in Washington, Norm Guerin and Merrill Wav of NASA, and correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. This is William McCrory in Washington. This program has come to you from the United States of America.